Moncrief on News Talk.
Claire Parker is a stand-up comedian from Brooklyn. You might also know her from her very successful podcasts, Celebrity Memoir Book Club and Good Noticings. But most importantly, she is, or at least was, 32 at some point and has a brand new comedy special talking all about it. Claire Parker, good afternoon.
Hi, thank you so much for having me. I'm so excited to be chatting with you.
I'm very excited too. I've gleaned a lot from this comedy special, Claire Parker's 32, but I have to ask, why 32 specifically?
Well, I was 32 at the time, and it seemed like a good way to be honest about myself. I feel like there was something about being 32 specifically, though, that a lot of women go through. If not 32 for them, then maybe 28, 36, where there is this like a year in your life where suddenly it's time to start thinking about having a baby. And you're like, okay, I have to kind of just like deal with the fact that that is my future coming, but I don't know if I'm actually ready for it yet. The maternal instinct that they promised would kick in when I turned 18 has yet to kick in exactly.
You're still thinking about like, do I go to Ibiza? Do I have a baby?
I went to Primavera for the first time last year and I was like, I feel like I'm behind. I've been going to this in New York. We have something called GovBall, which is like for high schoolers. And I went for the first time at 31. So I was like, by my math, I'm like 15 years of fun behind where I'm supposed to be right now. And I don't know if I have time to do everything.
Oh, time is a cruel mistress, truly. This special is about lots of things, but particularly motherhood, as you spoke about there. And what I loved about the special is you kind of removed the sanctity of it in your sketch, which is refreshing. Like your take on everything is very, very candid, which I appreciate. How did you kind of come to you say the maternal instinct didn't kick in, but you would like to have children? I feel like that's a gauche question to ask, but because I'm a woman, I can. So
no,
I'm going to.
Exactly. And I feel like I appreciate you saying that because I do think having those two things at the same time was crucial for me. And it's funny, I'm in this like liberal bubble in Brooklyn. As you can imagine, motherhood isn't particularly sacred in the Brooklyn stand-up comedy world. So I'm used to hearing people be flippant and making fun of it. And I think we're in this point right now where it's so big on TikTok and on Instagram and on social media overall to like talk about how horrible and difficult motherhood can be. And so I feel like there was this honesty. And I actually cut a joke about like, I feel like it's hard to have a baby right now because all the women are being honest and it's like so bad for the rest of humanity. Like, why would any, like, you get online and they're like, yeah, I love my baby, but also I've ripped in holes you didn't even know you had. And you're like, there's a reason the truth of childbirth has been kept from the younger generations. And that's because if you know what you're getting into, you just won't get into it. Why would you? It's deadly.
Is this material you've kind of covered before in your stand-up? Because how long have you been doing comedy for?
Oh my gosh, 10 years.
10 years, were we? And yeah. Do you think this is the first time you've really broached this in kind of a serious way in terms of stand-up?
Yeah, because I think my stand-up is quite reflective of what I'm actually going through at every period of my life. And something I'm really lucky about in my career is that because of the podcasts and the success of my two podcasts, I have these like incredibly female audiences. Like 92% of the people who listen to our podcasts are women. So you record a podcast alone in a room. I'm with my best friend. We're just chatting honestly. So I've been able to like have this safe space of forgetting that anybody that isn't just like my friend at brunch would be listening to me making these jokes. So I think it gave me room to be honest about what I know other women in this position are thinking about. And I feel like, I mean, back to the sanctity of it all is like something I really tried to balance it with is in addition to being like flippant and candid, I wanted to make sure that it was coming from this place of people knew I did want a kid, that, you know, it's easy to like make fun of men and make fun of childbirth and be horrified, but then you have to kind of couple it with like a sincerity of, but at the same time, it is what I want. So what do you do when the thing that you want sounds terrible?
How did you get into comedy in the first place?
Well, you know, I've always just been so funny and people really, when I graduated college, I was in New York City and I wanted to be a TV writer. And I remember Googling like, well, how do you become a TV writer? And you need an agent to submit a script. And I was like, well, how do you get an agent? And they were like, they have to like you already. And I was like, well, how do you get someone to like you? And I really was going down the rabbit hole of like, well, how do you break into this industry? And the thing with the lowest barrier to entry really is stand-up comedy, because for years, it's just you're in a basement in Queens with like a bunch of homeless people and everyone gets the same 3 minutes to try out their material. So it really was just the easiest thing to become a part of. And then it became so addictive that it went from being like a stepping stone to kind of the end goal.
And then how have you found the response to this special in particular? I know you were mentioning how your audience is predominantly female. Have you had any kind of pushback? Do you feel like people have understood what you're trying to put forward?
Yeah, I feel like I've been lucky that like most of the people who are looking it up and watching it have been people who are already on my side that are looking to, they know what they're getting into. I think a lot of people are already fans of the podcast, so they kind of get my sense of humor. I, of course, have had a couple men who I see in the YouTube comments and I'm like, well, sir, you're lost. I joke a lot about my choice to not get Botox so far. And one guy commented, he goes, well, I have Botox in my legs and that helps me stand up and be pain-free. Are you saying me, somebody with who's had a stroke, shouldn't get Botox? And I was like, yeah, that's what I'm saying. That's exactly my point. Well done, sir. You've made something that had nothing to do with you all about you and sound preposterous. I'm just going to say yes. That's exactly what I meant with my special.
Oh, I love the internet. What an incredible place. I know you brought the show to the Edinburgh Fringe Festival last year. What was that experience like?
I mean, that was such an incredible experience. I had always wanted to do it. I had been told that it would be like wonderful and horrible. People were like, you're going to lose money. You're going to stand outside. You're going to beg for attention. It's going to be like backbreaking and soul crushing. And in it was, by day six, I barely could speak anymore. I had lost my voice. And also I have to say, you know, the Scottish audience, they're not really one to riff. I spent a lot of time on stage asking people where they were from and what they did for work and just getting crickets back. I have just, we've toured some in Europe, and I always say that like the biggest mistake we made was one time as a podcast, we did a show in Dublin and then a show in London, and the whiplash from having an Irish audience laugh and be so fun and then going to London where they were just sitting there nodding and going, well, that was funny. I was like, this is one of the worst experiences of my life. It was a learning lesson. You end with Dublin as a treat. You don't start with Dublin. It gives you an artificial sense of how funny you are. But it was like a great workout to be at the Fringe Festival because I really think it helped me get tight. I was running it over and over. I really got to know my own material well. And when I came back to the US, it was like taking weights off and going for a run or something.
For any hopeful comedians who might be listening and they're listening to you as a comedy veteran, can you please divulge maybe your most embarrassing stand-up moment and how you've kind of learned to move on from it?
I mean, well, when I started for years, I would do this thing called barking, which is where you stand outside on the street and you ask people to come see comedy. I'm sure if you've been to Times Square, or I'm sure you guys have something similar where people are like, comedy, free comedy, come on in, $5 comedy or whatever. So I used to do that in exchange for stage time. And once I did it for hours, and the guy who was running the show just kept extending the length of the show. So I was out there first an hour begging people to come in, and then a second hour. And, you know, by the third hour, he finally let me go up, and everybody I had gotten into the audience had, of course, gotten bored and left. So by the time I was on stage, it was truly me and one homeless dude in the audience who was just there for the warmth of it all. And I was doing stand-up, and I looked down, and he had started masturbating.
Oh.
And not even to me necessarily, but just because it was a warm, dark room. And I remember being like, okay, I should call security, but also if he leaves, there's no audience. And I really was like, I should just practice finishing my material. I put all this time in tonight. I got to get some jokes out.
I have a text in here just on the back of what you said about the Dublin show. Dublin doesn't give you an artificial sense of how funny you are. It shows how truly funny you are. So there you go. You can take that home.
Oh my
God.
Well, thank you. I appreciate that, Dublin. They're the most fun. It's like the best shows. It's like such a treat to get to come to Ireland.
We are really great. You've mentioned, and obviously in my intro there for you, I obviously mentioned your podcast, Celebrity Memoir Book Club, and now you're the co-host of Good Noticings. I want to ask why you moved away from covering memoirs. For people that are not familiar, Celebrity Memoir Book Club kind of does what it says in the tin. You were covering a celebrity memoir with your co-host, Ashley Hamilton, with your side of comedy, as you would expect. You made the decision to move away from that. Why is that?
You know, we did it for 5 years. I don't think people realize how long we were doing it. We did 50 episodes a year for 5 years. And when you do the math, that's over 250 memoirs. When you consider that we did bonus episodes and sometimes we do two books in one episode. After 250 celebrity memoirs, you really start to have an existential sense of dread of, I cannot keep reading these people's lives. I have to start living my own. I just felt like I was becoming kind of sick of the format. And I was so grateful for like the success of the podcast. And I was so grateful for like the people who loved it. And I just never wanted it to come across on the episodes that I was starting to sound bored with my own shtick. So I decided, why don't we move along and find something new? I also do believe in this industry, like if you don't change, you die. And I'd rather go out on a bang and a success than let everyone else get bored of us too.
But Good Noticings is really interesting. This is your new podcast now. It seems like he kind of saw a gap for yourselves in terms of women covering the topics that you do. Why did you feel that was important too?
I feel, and I don't know if this is true for Ireland as much, but in America, it felt like all the female-led kind of chatty pop culture podcasts were like this weird alt-right pipeline. I feel like pop culture, like the Blake Lively situation and the Amber Heard situation, they've become these like little microcosms of kind of right-wing conservative politics. And I think you look at somebody like Candace Owens or a podcast like The Toast, they on the surface seem like they're just chatting about celebrity news. But then you get deeper and there's some like difficult mindsets and values behind it. And I really wanted to be part of the change. I wanted there to be a way to talk about pop culture and the news and culture and things going on with like a nod to maybe trying to be less misogynistic, less racist. I just think it's easy because when you're making fun of these women, like we all want to tease the rich and the famous and the successful. Of course, as we learned in celebrity memoirs, like a lot of these people are quite out of touch and self-serving, but I think it can be tricky when you start untangling, well, what is making fun of the person for their own actions and what is coming from this kind of like preconceived sexism that we all have grown up with. So we really felt it was important to give people a place where they could discuss like Hailey Bieber and, you know, a nanny, like a bad nanny story or something while trying to be mindful of like power structures.
Absolutely. Okay, so the special is Claire Parker's 32. What do you hope to know by 42, Claire Parker?
Okay, this is a great question. I think the thing that I learned in my 20s most was like to allow myself to make choices, like producing my own special. I think I had this idea of this gatekeeper that if you were good enough, they would just come and like make your special for you. Or that at some point, if you worked hard and were like followed the rules, some powerful person comes in and makes a career for you. And the thing I've learned is like, you really have to make it for yourself, especially with social media and with like your ability to build an audience. Like it really is on you to make your own dreams come true. And so the thing I hope to learn in my 30s, I think is as a comedian, you know, I can be quite self-deprecating and I feel like I try to be relatable. I definitely don't ever want to be someone you look at on social media and makes you feel worse about yourself or make you feel behind. And I think like my stand-up tries to be something where people go, oh, that's exactly how I feel. But I'm definitely at a point now where I have to look around and I think I made some choices in my 20s and I took some risks and I failed a lot. And now I've built a life and a career I'm proud of. And I'm trying to figure out how to stay vulnerable and authentic and relatable without having to like deny the things I'm proud of or, you know, be an authentic and act. A problem I have is I could be like, well, who would listen to me? I'm an idiot. Only an idiot would like me. And then meanwhile, I have all of these listeners who do like me. And I'm like, I have to stop tearing down the people around me in order to tear down myself. So that's something I'm hoping to learn by 42, how to be vulnerable and honest, but still like be proud of the things I've accomplished.
Sage wisdom, indeed. Claire Parker, comedian and podcaster, thank you so much for joining me today. Claire Parker's 32, her comedy special, is available to stream now on YouTube.
Moncrief, weekdays at 2 on News Talk. Conversation that counts.